to Minority Corner
with an Eke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues,
only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike.
This week on Minority Corner,
what's cooking in our solo corner for this week?
Well, Aneke, it is episode 140, and I couldn't think of a better way to bring it in than just celebrating Jimmy Baldwin.
Yes!
Also known as James Baldwin.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm excited to celebrate James Baldwin, the amazing writer, activist, intersectional, amazing person.
Yes, so this is going to kick off a two-week episode of a corner segment about James Baldwin. This week, we're going to talk about I Am Not Your Negro and that amazing documentary that was done that I know you've seen as well, and talking about the very many conversations that brings up. And then we're going to take a little, like, how well do you know James Baldwin? And then
I wonder how well
week
I
we'll
know.
Be following, and we'll test it out. We're going to test you, my lady.
Okay.
And then next week, we'll be diving into some more James Baldwin about an interview that he did with The Village Voice. So. So much Jimmy Baldwin coming at ya.
Super excited. We're also going to talk about Delta.
Delta Airlines. Yeah, I got some stories to tell you, and about our rights as passengers on planes.
Oh my goodness.
And your civic duty in serving on jury duty. And Jennifer Lopez. She's getting a Video Vanguard Award.
She might pop up a little later.
She might.
So we'll see how that goes.
Let's get into the episode, my lady.
Let's go. James.
Hey. Hi. Oh, my God. Hey.
How's it going?
Oh, you know, doing a lot of things. So I don't even know where to begin. I don't know where to begin. It's a choose your own adventure.
Well, what about a civic duty? I hear that you have been called to arms.
I just got cast in something, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, we could go that direction. Yeah.
I just got cast as juror number one in the real life story of James does jury duty.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool. So tell me about it.
So here's the thing. Originally going into, so I had jury duty. I'd already postponed because I was going to Phoenix to DJ my on Sassy and 70th birthday in Phoenix.
So much fun.
Out in the desert. I don't understand, like, what are we doing out in the desert? Like, we just have, like, terraformed the desert. Like, literally, people just living out in the desert. That's what's happening.
I know, people love it. It's so true. That dry heat, man. People love it. Lizard life.
I don't even understand who was, like, at, like, way back when, like, ooh, this looks good.
The Pueblo Indians.
Okay. Well, they, like, had their shit together because they could, like, I just don't... There's, like, white settlers. Like, what the fuck were you thinking? Native, you ain't. Like, you don't have the science and technology to figure that shit out. So,
or the melanin, let's face it.
Or the melanin. I feel like they just were going out there to die. Also, sidebar, I must have, like, at some point tricked my family into that I am a world-class DJ.
Uh-oh.
Because, like, listen, I could show up. First of all, there's just a mess with, like, Delta Airlines of, like, it took me, like, 18 hours to get there, and it should have taken, like, 5 or 6.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. You went on, like, a straight-on Homer's Odyssey to get to Arizona.
It was pretty redonkulous. The flight kept getting delayed because of quote-unquote weather. They always say that at JFK. And then we sat on the tarmac for 3 hours. And then we're told that the pilot, they couldn't finish the flight because they were going to run out of hours.
So then we
had to get off the plane. Yeah, already, right? And so they're like, we're going to find you a new crew. And then they're like, we found you one. It looks like the same crew because it is.
They're all wearing wigs.
And they're like in costume. They're like, they're like wearing mustaches. They look very similar. And they're like, well, this crew can only take you to Atlanta because they only have enough hours for that. And then you're going to get a new flight. Just Delta, just choose your
Delta
adventure.
Delta doesn't play. They need to pay some overtime.
Right? Like hopscotching people around. So they're like, okay, you're going to get to Atlanta and then we're going to get you a new flight, right?
Okay.
So then we get onto this plane. And like, first of all, it takes forever to get boarded up, but we're like, okay, we're all on. We're like, okay, things happen. And then we're waiting for like an hour. They're like, oh, we have to wait for all enough bottles of water for everybody. They're like, it sounds more serious than you think. We're like,
I would have flipped a chair at that point. Busted like, my fist out that window, that plexiglass ass window.
Gone. Just gone. Ugh. And so we're like, okay. Then we wait another hour. And then they're like, surprise on the tarmac. They're like, hey, the crew timed out again. They don't have enough time to get you to Atlanta because they're timed out. They don't have enough hours.
What so then, is this? So pay then them overtime. People got to go places.
Then we get back off at the gate. And then, like, you know, there's like the people at the gate have no, they have nothing. They have no responsibilities. They have like, in terms of like, they have no control over what just happened to us. We need someone from like Delta head office to be here explaining shit.
Yes.
Like just listening to us complaining about
giving drink tickets,
given like refreshments, massages, even just being a human being to like listen to people's stories. Everyone's got a story and everyone's trying to get to something.
But people
just want to be heard. And the poor black woman at the gate.
Oh, of course.
Right?
Oh, no.
And so it's a flight. And on one side, I'm glad it was a flight from Phoenix because it was a bunch of white people. Okay. And like, as opposed to like, I just think if it was a flight in the reverse direction, those New Yorkers would have been in a bit of a hot tizzy.
Wait, James, are you saying that Phoenix is not a diverse place?
Yeah, I'm kind of saying that. I'm gonna go to. It's mostly white. There's some Latinos there, and like
I mean, your family's there. Your aunt's there.
My aunt, who we're like, Aunt Sharon, what are you doing here? She's like, I love it. But she actually wants to move back to California. Go figure.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Actually, she lives in a gated community, and while we're hanging out at her house, we got like in her own gated community. We were like, the security guard said that we had too many cars parked out in front of her house.
Oh my God. So, don't they know that she's sassy and 70? Like, what the fuck?
Apparently, they did not get the memo. So,
Phoenix, get your act together.
Get your act together. And so then there's like this guy, this white guy who's like going off on this black woman. And so, like, of course, I had to like step in for my sister and just be like, hey. And like, he's like not even letting her explain. He's just going off. So
he just needed to vent. Someone should have pointed him towards a pillar so he could yell at that
just
pillar.
Just yell at the pillar. Yeah, I know. Just, hey, dude, go yell at that pillar. And this woman, she has no control over anything. She's doing everything she can. And then we get told that we're gonna have an 8 a.m flight.
Bullshit.
And then the eight, well, you're right, you're so right, because the 8 a.m flight turned into a 10:30 a.m flight.
We extra found out bullshit.
Like, which we found out at like 6 a.m and crazy thing was is like we saw two flights from Phoenix going to Phoenix at 8 a.m and 8:30. I'm like, why were we not those flights?
So
why couldn't you give us
Delta.
Those crews,
you know why?
Oh
wait, was it a Delta flight to Phoenix?
It was
too?
A Delta flight. Yeah, the whole everything was Delta. All
this
Delta
is
all
so
the time.
Confusing. That's makes no goddamn sense.
Yeah. So it was a mess. Oh, and there were like children sleeping on the dirty ass floor. And so here's what
nasty.
I want to say for you: the way that you get a company's attention, tweet at them. Tweet, tweet.
You were tweeting.
I started tweeting up a storm. I started tweeting pictures. I started tweeting hashtag Delta sucks, Delta flight 455.
I mean, I saw your IG TV too.
Yeah, because like, and then I started getting DM messages from Delta, and they were trying to like, so, and then snacks and blankets showed up after I tweeted. So
who would have thought of that? Jeez.
It's so sad that you kind of have to tweet it out. But I will say situations like this show you who you are. I made friends with this wonderful, we called ourselves the Delta Refugees. We're in a text group.
That's
these
nice.
Young, wonderful women from Phoenix.
Look at that.
And it shows you who you are. Like, I am not a person that just kind of pops off. Like, sometimes it's sort of just like you have two ways to react to different things. It's like, this is happening. I can accept this. And like, it still hurts and it sucks.
Right.
And, I made a playlist while I was waiting. Like, I made
all
the,
you got to do your DJ job.
I still got to make it there. And, but when I got there, there was nothing set up. And like, my cousin, I don't set up DJ equipment. Like, my cousin was like, oh, I thought that you were just going to show up, plug in your laptop and play Spotify. I'm like, that's exactly what I am going to do, actually. Like, that's exactly it. But, you know, when your aunt sassy and 70, she just assumes that, like, when she saw you playing music at your brother's wedding, she just assumes that, like, oh, you're a world-class DJ.
Yeah, you know how to do this.
So that happened.
That is a lot. What a fucking adventure.
It was an adventure. And I got 30,000 free miles, which is kind of just a flight to San Francisco and back.
Yeah, but it's like, then you gotta fly Delta again.
I know, that's how they get you. I'm like, look at all these miles I have, and now I'm trapped. I am trapped, and that's how they get you. And you're just like, you feel, it's a terrible thing. And also, I realize that we don't have any advocacy rights as flyers.
That's
I Googled, what are our rights? Aneke, brace yourself.
I'm ready.
None. We don't have anything. Because back in 1979.
Oh, look at this. Bringing out the dates.
Bringing out the dates. Yeah. Check the calendar.
I know. Where were you? Give me a timeline. I'm
ready. Where were you when this happened? 1979, they started deregulating airplane companies in terms of like what they had to provide.
This is rude. So that's why Spirit is basically a milk crate on a kite.
Exactly. They can do whatever the fuck they want. There are advocacy groups that are pushing for like certain things like seat regulations, because if you notice, they're just getting smaller.
Yeah, they're tiny.
Why, like, if they want, like, back in the day, they used to like offer you like a hotel stay
or
make sure that you make sure you had cots if you were like. And there's no one holding there's no one holding airlines' feet to the fire. So it's like, if there were regulations that were saying, no, if you don't fly them out within a certain time, you have to provide them with hotel or food. They could have given us like massage vouchers, like
they
something.
They would have did it. Like,
else? I bet you flights would be flying on time. There's nothing that is forcing them to have to. They just give you more miles, you fly on them again, and you probably spend money buying earphones or cocktails.
Mad. And like, that like really pisses me off, actually, because it's like, how dare you? You are flying people. What's wrong with these corporations just trying to shave off some money when they should be trying to get people to continue to fly with them? Like, that's disgusting. And all it's these, not like, this is like a monopoly. I'm sorry. Well, I'm just getting on my soapbox.
Get on. I'm sorry. I'm just going to throw something out. I don't want you to take away with it. But it's not like ticket prices are going down, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it's not like they're not giving you more things. In fact, they're taking things away and making you have to pay extra for all this extra shit. And we're just kind of held hostage to these airline companies.
It's so true. Like, I remember flying when I was, and it's really sad because this literally is longer and longer ago the more that I think about it, because I've been flying ever since I was like a baby.
Ooh, baby flyer. Aneke's been doing it.
I'm a baby flyer.
You got your baby wings. She was young.
They used to give kids free pins with the wings.
Right. Not anymore. That's
extra. They don't do that shit anymore.
Sorry, little Susie. You want wings?
$10. You used to get a meal whenever you were on a flight. And now it's like you have to buy a expensive ass snack box.
And
like,
I believe that they only have to feed you at the flight is 6 hours or more. So sometimes, like, not all of my flights from the East Coast to the West Coast, sometimes, surprise, the flight can only be 4 hours and 45 minutes when they want it to be, when they're like, we don't want to feed you.
Right. No, boom. I know. I go back and forth to the East Coast and I haven't had a meal supplied to me. The only time that I've ever gotten a free meal is when I fly internationally now.
And you're paying enough. Like, can I get something else more than crackers? And that's all they gave us when we were waiting. They're like, here's some crackers and apple juice. And then,
plane that was sitting there had food on it. They should have brought those snack boxes out to you guys.
And just give it to us. And also those bottles of water that we waited for, we never got them. We never got
Delta
them.
Delta should be a shame.
And when we got to Phoenix, there was snacks and crackers left there at Phoenix. They were like, have at it. And even the flight to Phoenix, they made you pay for all that food. It was insane.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I literally sometimes saw the worst in people and the best in people. Like, I bought donuts for people and fed them.
That's nice of you.
I was Mother Teresa-ing feeding the people. But, like, this mother was so hungry on the plane that, like, she devoured the sandwich and then looked at her son and was like, oh, here you go.
Well, hey, you got to put your oxygen mask on first.
That's true. You know what? She watched the video. She watched the video. She was like, baby, I got to do this. Because, you know, she's got to push the luggage when they get there. So
I mean,
I get it.
Come on. Yeah.
So that's that.
So you go from the terror of the sky.
Yes.
To being cast as juror number, what number are you? 100?
Number one,
ladies
and gentlemen.
Excuse me.
I am juror number one. And at first I was going into it thinking like, okay, I got to get out of this shit. So
yeah,
I was doing some research online.
Feel.
I was doing some research online about like how to get dismissed. And so like wearing like a Malcolm X t-shirt, which I don't have. So I was like, I'll wear my Black Panther t-shirt.
Okay.
But I also had an audition later in the day. So I needed to dress like something conservative as a backup option. But then as I was there, and I'm not discussing the case because I legally can't, and I'm taking my duty very seriously.
No, you
can't.
And
as I was there and I saw the guy, I thought, hold up, wait a minute. Let me put some boom on it. Because back in the day, like, it's such an honor that I, as a Black man, get to actually even serve on a jury.
This
because the juries of yesteryear were a bunch of white people with a noose and a tree.
I wouldn't even say yesteryear.
Oh, yeah. Even the juries of today. You're right. Exactly. So
I, mean,
I was like, you're right. Yeah. What am I doing? But like, but just like, there are people, ancestors of mine, that would have like loved that the opportunity to get to serve on a trial and like wanting
it's
to be
so
able to
true.
Deliver
right.
on a jury of the peers. And we talk so much about, you know, democracy. This is a part of democracy. And so
it's
I want to kind of help shift. Like, it, I know it can be inconvenient. There's never a great time to serve on jury duty. But what I realize is like, and it's just all these people like trying to get out of it. And I get it. We all have things, but like, that's the thing is that we all have things. And God forbid any of us, you know, you never know what could happen in life. I could end up,
right,
you know,
I mean, well, I hope
never,
not.
I hope not either, but you just never know the wrong turn of events. And for someone who knows that they're innocent and they were in the wrong place at the wrong time, like, I would want, like, it's, I feel like a lot of times the best people for juries end up getting out of it, you know? So,
yeah, it's true. It's people, yeah, I don't know. It's so true. I'm not even going to go into reasons of who they are because I could get sticky. But still, like, I mean, it makes a lot of sense that I actually was just thinking about this today because I watched the John Oliver segment on Prosecutors, which he just did.
Oh, I just watched that too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and how they purposely would not, you're not supposed to discriminate by race against picking juries, but they have like a ways around it. So it's,
oh, that's how I learned to wear my Malcolm X shirt.
I know,
shirt.
Look at you, like... But I'm
that's
glad that you
that
turned
from.
It around. I'm glad that
I
you
did,
turned
I,
it around.
You know what? I got in that courtroom and I buttoned up my Black Panther shirt and I said, not today, Wakanda, not today.
Not today.
I am American today. I got to serve. I got to do it.
Got to do your civic duty.
I did my civic duty. And I wasn't surprised when I got cast as juror number one. I was like, it's a really interesting system the way that they do it. And I got picked and like, they make you, it's almost like we got to learn. It was like speed dating because you get on a microphone and you have to answer all, they give you a sheet and it's all these questions about yourself and like what you do, how old you are, where are you from? What are your hobbies? What books do you listen to? Do you smoke? Do you drink? Do you have a driver's license? Have you?
That is like getting to know somebody.
Oh, like they want to get to know you on like, it's, I'm not kidding. It was a full page of questions.
This is crazy.
And I went first and you give me a microphone and
I know
audience.
you're ready for it. DJ James on the mic.
I was like DJ, I was doing some stand-up stuff and
the
judge was like, now Mr. Martin did really well, he set the bar really high, don't feel like you have to do it, you know, as well, he's a professional actor, so
everybody
you know.
Else is probably like so happy, they're like, woo.
Yeah,
that seat's taken. Now I get to just relax.
Ooh, but they try to come for you. Sometimes they try to come for you when they do the cross-ex. I felt like I was like, I was in How to Get Away with Murder. Good thing I did my research and watched How to Get Away with Murder because I knew how to prepare against Annalise Keating. So I was just, I was ready. But they ask you the questions. You're just like, yeah, I could.
This
I would
so
be able to.
Crazy. I legit have never gotten to the point where they ask me questions. I usually get dismissed, which is... Yeah. You know, having a double N in my name, you know, probably.
Oh, God. She's too ethnic. She got to get out of here.
Well, I can't wait till this trial is over and you can talk about it because I'm sure there's going to be something interesting that happened.
Oh, already. I have a stand-up show coming up this weekend. I've already got some jokes coming out without discussing the case, but there's, you know, you can just talk about the general thing. But I want to encourage everybody, all of our listeners, do your civic duty. It's a way of also, it's part of democracy. It's also like, you know, we talk about voting, but this is also part of it. Serving
it's
on
so
a jury
true.
Is
You're
it's,
right.
it's part of. If, and you know what? And there's so many countries where this isn't even a possibility. You know,
I know.
Like, you
jury
just get thrown
appears.
Away. And
I
like
know.
Here, we kind of like. I feel like we kind of forgot how important and it's not. It's a privilege to be able to serve on a jury. So that's my 2 cents.
You know what? I'm glad that you like brought us through that journey because you like started off with the same sentiments that like I feel like the majority of us feel. If you came at me with the story talking about how you had to do your civic duty and how you were ready to serve your country, I would have been like,
side eye.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. But the fact that you came at me with a relatable story about how you wanted to get out of that mess, but then you felt like you couldn't enter.
I was like, I got auditions. I ain't got time for this. Like,
I know.
But then I just, you know, everything turned around for me. I turned the beat around.
You heard the call.
I did. I heard. You know what? Literally, I did. I, you know, every day I ask the universe, I say, you know, use me, let me be of service. And mm-hmm. that was literally, the phone was ringing. It was like, this is what I need you to do.
It's
I
like,
need you to
pick
sit
up,
your ass
James.
On that fucking, you know, case. And so there we go.
Pick up.
Pick up. All right, fine. I will accept the charges, but not be billing
me. You should
me.
Watch 12 Angry Men to just give yourself some inspiration, some get yourself researched for the role that you have been cast in.
Well, I do remember Pauly Shore's Jury Duty.
I think you should probably step it up a notch.
Okay. Well, it also had, what's her name in it? She was in Wayne's World. She is,
you know,
Taiwanese.
Step it up a notch.
What's her name?
She's so...
You know her. She's so beautiful.
Everybody is screaming at us right now.
She's
Tia Carrera.
Tia Carrera. Yes.
Yeah, there we go.
She's one of my favorite actresses from the 90s, and she was in Jury Duty. Whatever happened to her?
I don't know. Whatever happened to her?
She was too soon. The people were not ready for her.
No, she did a lot of stuff.
But no, what I mean is that people weren't ready for her amazing POC-ness.
Oh, like, yeah. Like, we need more of her.
Yeah,
she's still alive.
Come back.
So that's good.
Someone cast her.
Ooh, she looks good.
Ooh,
no,
I
no, that picture was taken in 2009.
Oh, okay. Well, but you know what? I bet she's still... You got me all excited.
Not that it matters what she looks like.
Matter.
We need to get past women's looks, so...
We do. But I know, I like... Can I take 1 minute just to comment on something? You know.
Yes. Oh, wait. Before we move on, I just want to say...
Yeah.
She was in a movie called Palm Swings. Which
Stop.
Came out in 2017.
I'm done with you.
And she played Miss Cherry Bomb. So, you know, she was also in Blue Bloods.
Aneke doing the on-the-spot research as we speak. You know what? That classic indie hit, Palm Swings.
Yeah.
Palm Swings. Damn it. Who is her agent? You need to.
I don't know.
She deserves more and better. At
I'm
least
just
going to
say.
Well, can't she get one of the Adam Sandler Netflix movies? Like.
The last five of her movie titles, you know what? Actually, the last a lot of these, but has been pretty. These names.
Okay, read some of them.
Okay, Showdown in Manila. That's you know that could be something.
Yeah,
Pirates action. Code: The Adventures of Mickey Mattson. Okay.
Oh, you know Mickey Mattson.
Asteroid versus Earth.
Ooh, that sounds like a really good like sci-fi movie channel movie.
Here's one that is, you know, is a twist.
Okay.
It's called You May Not Kiss the Bride.
Okay. There
it
is.
And then to go along with that, there's Dark Honeymoon.
Ooh. I see. You know, she's doing her own, like, you know, like a Joan Crawford type series. Like, it's dark, it's twisty, each one leads into the next. So, you know what? She's doing her own thing. We're just not appreciating her work. So, you know
it's
what?
True.
I will fall on my sword for you, Tia Carrera.
I will, too. But she was strong in Lilo and Stitch. She's held
on.
She was in Lilo and Stitch, Lilo and Stitch 2, Stitch Has a Glitch, and Leroy and Stitch.
Oh, see? You know what? She found her franchise. She found her franchise.
Oh, Tia Carrera.
We love you. Come on the show. You've got time.
We salute you.
You've got time. Come on the show. Something I just want to I want to briefly touch on this. And I think I would like to dive into this in a later episode more in deep. But Beyonce did an interview and she talked about how...
Vogue.
Yeah.
Good. It was good. I suggest read it. It's a quick, easy read.
Well, so she has that thing where she does her, she doesn't look into her, she says that she researched her ancestry and recently learned that she came from a slave owner who fell in love with and married a slave.
Yeah.
I mean,
she called it generational trauma.
Right. And so again, like, you know, I talked about this a few weeks ago when I had learned my connections to slavery and how close it was. And actually going back to my aunt Sassy in 70, I found out some even more stories and it's even closer than I thought.
Oh, interesting.
It was my great aunt Annie, she, and that's interesting. And so this is what parallels what Beyonce said, is that the way that my aunts described it, they were like, oh, they kept calling her the mistress, right? Because she worked inside the house. And I'm not exactly sure that she was like a slave or if she was, I don't know the timeline. So I don't know if
it was before 1865, she was a slave. If it was after 1865, she probably was paid low enough wages to be considered a slave.
So I think it was that far, because I don't think my great aunt Annie was that old. Because okay. I don't know. But either way, like, I think it's so interesting. I don't think the word mistress is appropriate because it's the power dynamic. And so it's even that, like, and so even looking at Beyonce's interview that, like, oh, the slave owner fell in love with the slave.
Yeah. Slave had no choice.
Yeah. So,
she couldn't have been like, nah, I don't want to marry you. She would die.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm so, it's glad, like, you brought that up.
And so it's just something I thought was really interesting, because I mean, it's your ancestors were, my ancestor was raped, you know, and her ancestor was raped, you know?
Yeah, mine too. All of, like, if you are African American and you have a history in slavery, I would say there's a high percentage of generations of rape that have fallen through your family. And it's something that has been like, oh, Thomas Jefferson and Sally, what's a face? Like, that's not a love story. None of these are love stories. This is legitimately abuse of power, abuse of bodies repeatedly. These are... These children that come out of it weren't celebrated. They were then slaves. Mm-hmm. Like, it is horrific. I mean, there's a reason why the rule was, if your mother is black, you are a slave. Yeah. Because if your mother was white, then you're not a slave. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because it was so ingrained in society, this rape of black women, that they worked it into the rule book. It's horrible. Mm. And I'm so glad you're bringing this up, because we celebrate being light. We celebrate, you know, straighter hair. Like, I just retweeted this thing where somebody was like, we need to start casting darker black women in leading roles and love interest roles. Because let's just take a survey if you want to. Think about it when you have some time off, and think about all the love interests in various movies and films that have black women in it, and how many are darker than a paper bag.
I mean, you can go through the list of, like, I mean, the women that are getting casted. I mean, I love me some Tessa Thompson or Zoe Kravitz or Paula
Patton. Yeah, I love them. But this isn't a knock against the actresses. Right. Yeah. It's a knock against, like, well, why can't we showcase some other ways that black women look, you know?
Yeah. Well, so, and also just shows how deep-rooted this stuff is, because honestly, even in my own family, my great-grandmother, I kept calling her my aunt, she's my grandmother. My great-grandmother, Annie.
She's closer to you than your...
Yeah, I'm sorry to rewind. That was my great-grandmother, Annie. These are new words for me, you guys. I'm discovering my family. but, like, her sisters... Annie was darker than her sisters. And you look at these pictures, these women, they did not look like they were black women. They almost looked like they were kind of native. They just were clearly mixed with a lot of stuff. But it was the thing that they, like, their mother had taught them, like, do not marry someone darker than you, because your children will be darker. And so that was the way of the time for survival. It's crazy how it also, but that's so ingrained into our families and what we're passing down. So it's just so interesting that at that time period, that was the conversation in my family. Like, it's
crazy.
It's I understand it from a survival standpoint, but it's horrific.
Yeah, it's the same thing that has happened in my family too. There's definitely been a history of that. And in fact, there's a movie coming out soon that they just announced the casting of it with Tessa Thompson and Ruth Negga. And they are, it's called Passing, and it's going to be about two black women who are passing in white society. They see each other, and then they have to figure that out, which is good. Ugh. And I'm glad that those stories are being told, but I also want to see some stories of some dark-skinned black
women,
too.
You want to see, like, some black woman pop up and be like, I see you, girls.
Or just,
I know you. Right?
I'm a
you want to see Lupita Nyong'o
woman.
Being
I'm desirable. Like, I'm not just powerful and loud, you know? Like, it needs to be a two-way street, and that's definitely not a knock against, because you know I love me some Tessa Thompson.
Oh, absolutely. Like, but we need some more, like, more Viola Davis, like, skin tone. Even dark. There, like, there's the fact that I can count the amount of, like, really, really dark-skinned black women. There's not that many. Like, there's even darker shades in Viola Davis don't really get that much, like, you know, prevalence.
I would even say not even, like just regular brown. When was the last time you saw somebody that was, like, our tone that was on television? You know what I mean? Like,
well, I watch a lot of Shonda Rhimes, so.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, even in Shonda Rhimes, you would be surprised. Mm. Like, that one lawyer, hotshot lawyer show, they only had that one black woman in it who was light. Not that there's anything wrong. Like, I feel like I'm giving a conflicting image, you know? I just feel like there needs to be more
you
representation.
Just want to see more of the black diaspora. Is that me saying
right.
that right?
Yeah, exactly. And me saying that us celebrating lighter beauty is just us denying the fact that black women have basically ushered in, through violence, the African-American race here. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, I don't know.
Well, this has been a lively discussion. Ooh. I don't want to cut it short, but we got to get into the main event of the show.
No, I'm ready for your corner. I think, if anything, it primed us for your corner.
It did, because we are doing a happy birthday to James Baldwin.
Yay!
So you want to understand what's going on in the world.
But trying to keep up with the news can be such a headache.
With clickbait headlines, TV news acting like there's always two equal sides to every story.
And never enough talk about the various McDonald Playland characters.
Okay, in my defense though, when I brought that up, we learned a lot.
That's true.
I'm Brent Black.
I'm Courtney Unlow.
And I'm Travis McElroy.
With Trends Like These.
Real life friends talking internet trends.
We debunk misleading headlines from the top trending news.
We always throw in at least one positive story.
But we call out bullshit when we see it.
Join us each week on MaximumFun.org.
Because with trends like these,
who needs any memes?
Ah? Ah?
Yeah, that was great.
Happy birthday to ya. Happy birthday to ya. Happy birthday.
James Baldwin.
James Baldwin. I love James Baldwin. Definitely. It's he doesn't give enough credit that I think.
That's the thing.
Should.
You know what? I feel like for me, I can't believe I have not talked about James Baldwin. Like, we've referenced him on the show, but I can't believe I've not done a full segment about James Baldwin.
I know. He's amazing. Just as a tidbit, you should check out, it's on YouTube, but he's invited to Oxford and he does a debate.
Yes.
Yeah, with the debate team for affirmative action or the plight of black people, basically.
I think it's the plight of black people.
And it is amazing. His words are
like
magic.
He gets like a standing ovation at the end of it.
Mm-hmm. He deserved it.
Yeah.
Because he is a genius.
He's such a genius. For those of you who don't know who James Baldwin is, not throwing any shade at you, but welcome to the party.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know who James Baldwin is, he was born in 1924 in New York City. He grew up in Harlem, which is where I'm living right now.
Yeah.
His middle name, you know what his middle name is?
Who is that?
Arthur.
Oh, wow. Check that out.
James Arthur Baldwin or James Arthur Martin were like practically twins.
Yeah.
He published the novel Go Tell It on the Mountain in 1953.
Yeah.
And he got like, he was capturing, as they call it, the Negro voice of the times.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote Giovanni's Room, which Giovanni's Room is huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's a landmark book because it was the first time anyone was writing about homosexuality in the way that he did.
Wow.
It like essentially paved the way for just gay literature and gay stories being out in the mainstream.
Wow.
It was a very dangerous book for him to write. I believe he wrote it in the late 50s.
Mm.
The first, I did a show called Waiting for Giovanni. It was my first, it was a new work we did at New Conservatory Theater Center. It was the first professional theater company production I ever got to work on. Mm. And they just had their East Coast premiere out here in New York a week ago, and 2 weeks ago. And it was kind of a cool first circle moment for me because the artistic director from New Conservatory Theater Center came out, the writer was out.
Oh,
and
wow.
I just felt like, oh, a passing of the baton. Like, I started in San Francisco with the show, and now here I am. I'm in New York.
That's so exciting. Wow, look at that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, he also wrote essays on works like Notes on Native Son, which Richard Wright wrote about.
Yeah.
The Fire Next Time. He was really good friends with Lorraine Hansberry.
So
like,
cool.
He was, like, in that time period, he was, like, you know, a little bit ahead of, like, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X in terms of getting clout on the main stage of the cultural climate involving, like, race.
Mm.
But it was like, you know, him and Lorraine Hansberry and Richard Wright, like, he was up there in terms of the people that were making an impact and changing the conversation around race.
Yeah, in an artistic way.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, in honoring, you know, his life, I was trying to think about, like, the best way to go about this. Like, I was thinking about maybe doing, like, a quiz of information on him. Mm. Instead, I actually wanted to just kind of look at the tail end of his life.
Yeah.
There are two works that I think are really interesting that talk about, like, him. He died in 1987.
Mm.
And there are two works that I think really hit the nail on the coffin, or really capsulate. Is that a word? It is now.
Yeah.
Capsulates his sort of late in life, and that is I Am Not Your Negro, the documentary, which I know you
excellent.
Saw.
Excellent.
And I'd like to talk about that.
Yeah.
And then also just reading some excerpts from an interview that he did with the Village Voice in 1987.
Oh, so right before he passed away.
Yeah, yeah, really close. It was one of the last interviews that he did.
Wow.
And I thought that I Am Not Your Negro does such a really great job of capturing, like, his sort of life and thought as a Black man in
yes.
race.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the interview does a really good job at sort of talking about his life as a homosexual. And
yeah.
I won't say gay because he doesn't really identify himself as gay. But let's talk about I Am Not Your Negro.
Oh, but can I just do a quick little plug? Because I'm super excited
yes.
about this. Because this came
yes,
out,
yes, yes.
The trailer came out like a couple days ago. Barry Jenkins, the director of Moonlighting, he put out a trailer for If Beale Street Could Talk. So he's
Ooh.
Doing a movie of the book that James Baldwin wrote.
Whoa. Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's just like, I mean, you just can't get enough of Jimmy Baldwin.
And Barry Jenkins combined, like, come on, dream team. That's going to be awesome. And the trailer looks beautiful.
I have to check that out. Thank you for giving me the news and the tidbits.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So I Am Not Your Negro, just to give you a little preface before we jump in and sort of talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's on Amazon Prime right now for your viewing pleasure.
Check it out. It's excellent.
And so the premise is that in 1979, James Baldwin wrote a letter to his literary agent describing his next project called Remember This House.
Yes.
And this book was going to be a revolutionary book that was a personal account of the lives and assassinations of three of his close friends, Medgar Evers,
mm-hmm.
Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King Jr. And he died before he was able to finish. It was only about 30 completed pages of his manuscript.
Wow.
And so director filmmaker Raoul Peck envisions that book that James Baldwin never finished, and so they use actual words from it to create. It feels like you've seen it. It
yeah.
feels like he's alive in the picture.
It's
right?
It's a tone ass poem. Like, it is
yeah.
the way that the excerpts and clips. They have interviews. They have. Is it Samuel Jackson
yes.
who does his voice? He does an excellent
yes.
job doing
Which
his
I
voice.
I didn't realize till the very end. Like,
I know.
The voice is so on point of Jimmy Baldwin.
It's
on point.
You think that Samuel Jackson does play Samuel Jackson when he's, like, acting. But he can actually act. Like, he did such
yeah.
a good job being James Baldwin. Like,
yeah.
his and when you hear different speeches and interviews, James Baldwin has a very distinct voice. So it's,
he does.
It really kind of helps get you into the mindset and the frame of everything that was going on. It's I think it's excellent. It's well done.
Yeah. It's so good. And it's also interesting because it's so fascinating to hear. First of all, what I thought was really great about it is that they put, a lot of times when it's like an old timey back in time movie, it's all black and white. What I thought was so interesting is that they I don't know the words for that. Recolorized.
Oh, yeah.
They colorized.
That's what it is.
Oh, is that it? Uh-huh. Okay. They colorized the old footage. And so there's something that is so in your face about watching things like white people protesting segregation and these young black girls trying to go to school and it's in color.
Right.
There's something that makes it just like, it makes it real, you know? And I'm like, damn, there are people alive like your grandparents.
Yeah.
That's them.
Exactly.
Like,
your parents,
they're on the
depending
wrong side
on how old you are listening to this.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
This is
and
recent.
The hate
I know.
And anger and the like, and the Nazi symbol was alive and kicking back in
that
time period.
Even more ridiculous because that's straight up 10 years after you were just fighting the Nazis. Like,
right.
What?
And so you're like, no, hey, they're actually pretty dope and pretty amazing.
What? Like, that makes no sense at all. And also, it's so timely. Everything that he talks about resonates now.
Yes, yes. Because they would parallel it with things like Black Lives Matter or, you know, the lynchings that were happening to young boys back then to the things of, like, you know, Tamir Rice or Trayvon Martin being killed today. And, like, it doesn't shy away from packing. Like, I've never seen such close-up, visceral images of the lynchings.
Yeah.
Like, it was...
They show
you.
Oh, my
gosh. And they show it to you. And it's important for us I think he even says in the movie, he's like, you know, we are our history. It's important for us to know our history because we are our history. We don't have to be governed by our history, but it's important for us to take that in.
And I think it's so important that somebody like James Baldwin is highlighted that as an activist and a writer, because there's something, his way with words.
Yes.
And we'll get into that when you're reading some of his words. But his way with words, off the cuff and written, is just beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, it really, he has a way. When I was watching I Am Not Your Negro several times, I was just like, wow, that hit me. That just cut through me, you know? Like, he has a way of just really kind of getting... without being flowery or fanciful, but just like cutting right to the quick to get you, you know, to understand.
Yeah. What I also thought was so interesting about I Am Not Your Negro is I feel like for me and like what I bring to the table in Minority Corner, and I think, no, I'd say for both of us, is actually, yeah, I think it's a cornerstone of what we've kind of built this podcast around is he spends a lot of time of talking about, media and film and those images. And I thought it was so fascinating because it's literally how we see ourselves and it defines how a culture sees itself and it's how a culture can choose to see itself. You know, they show these different clips and he talks about, you know, things like Uncle Tom's Cabin. He spends a lot of time, you know, there's, he's like, you know, they won't forget M. Leroy in this 1937 movie where this terrified janitor accused of raping a white woman. And he talks about how he never really saw his, you know, father in on the screen.
Right.
He never really saw himself in these images in this and he talks about like the importance of that. And like he was even and that's what we talk about
on
the
show
so much. The importance of what that does to visually see yourself and the sort of glorification that white people and we're still unpacking the damage, I would say, of this, of like, you know, thinking about these old John Wayne movies and him just like murdering Native Americans.
Right.
And
I mean,
everyone's rooting for him.
Crazy Rich Asians is coming out next weekend and it's 2018. And like we're like finally getting a movie that's cast with Asian Americans and Asian actors. Like we need representation in order for us to feel seen.
Yeah.
You know, and that's exactly what he brings up all the time. Like, I'm so glad you brought up how he dissects media, too, because it wasn't like he's, you know, only talking in like grand scopes of things. He taps into like what daily life is, you know, what we're seeing, what we're dealing with, what it is to just be a person. You know,
well, and also how there was also, you know, he talks about, you know, the different subsects of the Black community, like between Malcolm X and Medgar Evans and Martin Luther King Jr. and the different, like, there were so many different Black groups that were fighting for something and in different ways. And some groups were literally just, you know, and talk about some of my ancestors who we talked about in the last segment, who were just trying to just have a nice life. Mm-hmm. And so they were also buying into the images that they were being sold of the white hero and the cowboy and mm-hmm. wanting to just also, and we were being fed that image of like sort of how to assimilate, literally given like a blueprint. And it's interesting too, just like he talked about Sidney Poitier mm-hmm. and for a good while. And I'd like to actually put a pin in Sidney Poitier and come back. Like I'm going to do a deep dive at a later point about Sidney Poitier, because like such a fascinating and important figure in Black media and cinema.
Right. And, doesn't he talk about how Sidney Poitier and Harry Belafonte, they're like sex symbols, but not sex symbols, because it was like taboo to have like, you know, a Black guy be a sex symbol kind of thing.
Oh yeah. He touches on that. And because like we as Black people just in general were shown as so sexless, right? Mm-hmm. It's just weird, we're sexless, but yet there's a danger
we're
in
either
our sexuality.
Too sexy or sexless, like dangerously sexy, like oh my god, just like crazy sexy, or just like nothing dopey, nothing, like a dumbass, you know? Which by the way, I would like to point out our president has been doing repeatedly on Twitter by calling many notable black people stupid repeatedly. So pay attention to what's going on around you.
That dog whistling still happening. And also what's so interesting too is that like Jimmy Baldwin, you know,
Did he go by Jimmy?
That's what I call him. he's my friend, okay. Jimmy. I thought it was so fascinating too, because I can relate to this of like sometimes he just felt like such an outsider.
Yeah.
And like, you know, because he wasn't a Black Muslim. He wasn't part of the NAACP, which he points out has a lot of, it was sort of like Black class distinctions. Mm-hmm. That it was the people who were part of the NAACP were sort of the more well-to-do Black people.
Right.
And he wasn't involved with the church, even though like as a kid that like, he was raised in the church, but he just had grown out of it. And he really felt like his role was to be a witness and to get the story out. And because he was actually over in Europe during some of this time. And I think it was during the assassinations, he came back and was like, I have to bear witness. And he had to, you know, go to Martin Luther King's funeral and to Malcolm X's funeral and talk to Betty Shabazz and Coretta Scott King and bear witness to that. And like he was called home because he was like, I have more work that I need to do.
Right. No, it's fascinating. And I think that's kind of what's resonated with me a little bit is I've always felt a little outsider myself. I was not raised in the church. I am not a well-to-do Jack and Jill Black person. I sound the way I do. I listen to off the wall music. So I am a Black woman and I'm very proud of who I am, but I do feel a lot of the time outsider. So I think that's why I resonate with him a lot, because a lot of times to gain access into some of these activist groups, you have to play the part, and sometimes you just don't play that part.
Right. Yeah. But yet, like, he felt like a responsibility, especially when, like, I think the assassinations were happening. He, you know, he, J. Edgar Hoover, fuck that guy, was like, called him
worst.
A dangerous individual. He was, of course, like, you know, after him, you
Who
know.
Who wasn't J. Edgar Hoover after?
Anybody he was just, you know, threatened by. And then, like, you know, and Baldwin talks about how, you know, he felt like he was this older brother because he came before MLK and Malcolm X. Like he felt like he was this older brother and yet he outlived them all. And, you know, so many of his, you know, friends and colleagues died or were killed. Lorraine Hansberry died of natural causes. They do this great thing where they talk about this famous meeting between Bobby Kennedy, Lorraine Hansberry, and himself.
Right.
He takes Bobby Kennedy to task.
That was great. That's a great segment.
Yeah. Where I think like, Bobby Kennedy essentially, you know, says that there could be a president in 40 years, which there was, but just the way that he did it, but did it as if
it was
like,
in that idealistic type of not actually rolling up your sleeves and doing the dirty work sort of stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And also just the progression to it. I think it shows of, I think even the different actors of the time and artists of the time of like, I think after, like, it just seeing them all at the funeral of Martin Luther King. And I think that they all had different ideas of where they were in the Black struggle, but there's something about that was so unifying about that moment for everybody. Mm. He says, you know, the story of the Negro in America is the story of America.
Yeah.
And it's not a pretty story. And we are the story of America.
It's a truth. It's a truth. Black history is American history. It's everybody's history. That's the thing that we need to really understand with our histories. And I think that was one of the biggest mistakes that we could have done, is to designate, oh, this is Asian American history, this is Latino history, this is Black African American history. Like, no, it's all American history, because we're all here creating America. If you are living on this soil, I don't care if you're undocumented or not, you're contributing to the history of this country. And just because you might not be of that race, it caused a reaction for an action to happen. So therefore, it's your history. And I think he outlines that beautifully.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Aneka, I'm looking at the clock and I realize we're going to split our segment into two. Next week, we're going to come back and I'll do a reading from the Village Voice interview. So we just got your feet wet with that a little bit. And I thought it would be fun to
two-parter.
End on a James Baldwin quiz.
I love it. You know how we like a quiz here at the Minority Corner.
A little quiz. So there are 10 questions. I don't know the answers.
Okay.
So we're going to take it together.
Do you have an answer key?
I think if I hit enter, it'll say check answers.
Oh, it's one of these.
Again.
Okay. All right. Alrighty.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. James Baldwin wrote Notes of a Native Son in reference to what? A, Richard Wright, B, Robert Bone, C, Ralph Ellison, or D, Irving Howe?
I want to say A, but I'm also feeling C. Either A or C. I don't know.
Well, I'm going with A.
Okay.
And what are you going with?
A or C.
That is not a choice. And look, I know it's been a long time since you've taken a test, but tests don't work like that. Okay. So, and like I said, A or C. Okay. You get half a point if you get one of them right.
All right.
We'll go with that.
Okay.
Okay.
I probably won't remember. We don't know right after you click it?
We'll know right after you click it.
Okay.
We'll know. So you keep track of your A or C. Okay.
Okay.
What high school did James Baldwin attend in the Bronx? A, Christ the King High School. B, Central Bronx High School. C, Christ the Redeemer High School. Or D, DeWitt Clinton High School?
I have no idea. But using my sense.
I thought you knew your James Baldwin.
I don't know what high school he went to. Using my sense, there were two Christ schools. So it has to be one of those, because,
ooh, look at her.
I mean, why would they put variations on?
Because they're trying to slip you up. They're like, ooh, you know, it's a Christ something or other. Mm-hmm. So you're right. Yeah. I'm going to go with Christ the Redeemer.
Which one is that?
C.
And then A was another one, right? Or
Christ
B.
The King High School.
I'm going to say the King. Why not?
Okay. All right. We're splitting the difference there.
Okay.
In 1948, James Baldwin left the United States and moved to which country? A, England. Mm-hmm. B, France. C, Finland. D, Norway.
France.
Look at you. You maybe. Well, I don't know if you got it right. I do. I do know that you got it right.
Because
I remember that. He had a boyfriend by the name of Lucien for the longest time over in France.
Yeah. Plus, everybody, all writers go to France.
You know what? They be loving. They love Black
France.
Americans over there.
It's true.
They love you. Black Americans are loved over there
they
in France.
They do not
now,
like Black French people. Though.
I was literally going to say, Black Africans or French people? France, you got some weird. You need to fix it.
You need
it.
To figure
fix
it out. It. Figure it out.
What was the name of James Baldwin's first novel published in 1953? A, Nobody Knows My Name. B, The Fire Next Time. C, Another Country. Or D, Go Tell It on the Mountain.
Go Tell It on the Mountain.
I'm going to say Go Tell It on the Mountain as well.
Okay.
Number five. In 1963, his essay, Down at the Cross, got him on the cover of what magazine?
God damn it.
A, Newsweek. B, Life. C, Time. D, Look.
I'm going to say Life.
I was going to say Life, too.
I feel like life
was a big thing back then.
And they really liked the kind of, they liked a little, they did some diversity stuff on Life.
They did. I remember that from Dreamgirls.
A fictional musical.
That sometimes told the truth.
Okay.
You know what? It mirrored the truth. It had the riots, and then they wrote that song that was like...
What was the band?
We are family. Oh, wait,
what
no,
was the band
the
based
one.
Off of in Dreamgirls? What, who?
The Supremes.
Okay, good. At least you know that.
I know what it's mirroring. But you know what? It's just as Jimmy Baldwin said. So it's like our entertainment is how we see our reality.
It's true.
And sometimes like it's distorted. But in Dreamgirls, it was not. It was pretty well done.
Pretty
good
done,
job,
yeah.
Bill Condon. What was the name of his book-length essay that discussed the assassination of Medgar Evans, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King Jr.?
I'm Not Your Negro.
A, what?
And I'm Not Your Negro, right?
A, The Evidence of Things Not Seen.
Oh.
B, No Name in the Street.
Oh.
C, Just Above My Head. Or D, The Fire Next Time.
Ooh, A.
The Evidence of Things Not Seen.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go with No Name in the Street.
Okay.
Okay. James Baldwin wrote two novels in the 1970s. One was Just Above My Head. So if you use that for the last one, it was not the right answer.
Okay.
What was the name of the second one? A, No Name in the Street. Uh-oh. B, The Fire Next Time. C, If Beale Street Could Talk. Or D, Another Country.
What was the question? Oh, so they're companion piece books?
Yeah. What was the name of his second one?
I'm going to say A.
A. No Name in the Street. I think you're killing it on this. I'm going to go with your answer, too.
I don't know what I'm doing.
8. In another book-length essay, James Baldwin wrote about the Atlanta child murders in the early 80s.
Mm.
What was its name?
Oh, yeah.
A, The Fire Next Time. B, The Evidence of Things Not Seen.
Oh, my God.
C, Another Country. Or D, If Beale Street Could Talk. It's really like, which one haven't you used at this point?
Well, it's not If Beale Street Can Talk, because I know what that one's about.
Okay.
I know that the podcast about it is called Atlanta Monster.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to go with The Fire Next Time.
Okay.
In 1963, James Baldwin published a book of poems titled A, Jimmy's Blues.
Oh.
B, James's Blues.
Oh.
C, Jamie's Blues.
Okay.
Or D, Joey's Blues.
Well, it's not Joey's Blues. If it's Jimmy's Blues, then you have full carte blanche to call him Jimmy Baldwin, then.
Mm-hmm. But so I'm going to go with that one.
And I'm going to go with James's Blues.
Because we call him Jimmy in Waiting for Giovanni. So
that's fine.
And Jewel Gomez be knowing her stuff. James Baldwin was the victim of a vicious homophobic attack in the book Soul on Ice. What author wrote the book? A, Eldridge Cleaver. B, Timothy Leary. C, Kevin Brown. Or D, Richard Wright.
I'm going to say Richard Wright.
I am too. All right, and okay, we're going to check our answers.
Let's see if I remember anything.
Okay, number one, James Baldwin wrote Notes of a Native Son. Richard Wright, A, was the right answer, so you get half a point for that.
Yay!
Yeah. What high school did James Baldwin attend in the Bronx? The answer was D, Clinton High School. We both got it wrong. Okay. So, and then in 1948, James Baldwin left the United States and moved to which country?
France.
We both got that right.
Yeah.
What was the name of James Baldwin's first novel published in 1953? It was Goat's Out on the Mountain.
Yes.
We both got that right. Ooh, in 1963, his essay, Down at the Cross, got him on the cover of what magazine?
What was it?
C, Time magazine.
Oh, look at that. You know, I was thinking it was going to be if Time or Life.
Yeah, because Newsweek's not as big of a deal.
No,
but
like,
it was
going to
be Life or Time.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Times is, wow, that's good. Okay.
Yeah, he'll be getting on the Times. What was the name of his book-length essay that discussed the assassination of Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King Jr.? The correct answer was No Name in the Street. I believe that you said The Evidence of Things Not Seen.
Which I think The Evidence of Things Not Seen is actually the Atlanta child murders game book. But we'll
and
get
it
to
is.
That.
Actually, yeah. Oh, I just peeked. Number 8. The Evidence of Things Not Seen is the correct answer for the book essay that was written about the Atlanta child murders in the early 80s.
Yeah, that's. I thought so.
James Baldwin wrote two novels in the 1970s. One was Just Above My Head. The second one was If Beale Street Could Talk.
Oh, it was. Okay. I thought of, yeah. Oh, that's right, because the movie takes place in 1970. So then that would make, okay. Got it. Yeah.
And in 1963, my best friend, Jimmy Baldwin, published a book of poems titled Jimmy's Blues.
Now, yeah. Look at that. You.
My friend Jimmy.
Got
Jimmy
it. You
Baldwin.
Know him. You know him well.
We're both Jimmy Arthurs.
You have never been called Jimmy.
I'm going to start now. My best okay. friend, Jimmy. Jimmy's Blues. Jimmy's Corner. I want to from now on refer to my corner as Jimmy's Corner.
But also, I like how you're like, I am in my 30s. I'm going to be called Jimmy now.
It's a weird
James
switch up,
no
right?
more. Call me Jimmy.
Jimmy now. I'm just, you know, keeping it young. Call me Jimmy.
All right.
James Baldwin was the victim of a vicious homophobic attack in the book Soul on Ice. It was written by Aldridge Cleaver.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, I think Richard Wright and James Baldwin started having a falling out towards them.
Yeah.
The later years. Yeah. Because Richard Wright didn't like all the homosexuality talk and
stuff.
Oh,
see? Within the community.
I know. We got looks to look at. I think we both didn't pass, but we gave it a best shot.
We gave
so.
It a full, hearty, you know, well go round. And now everybody knows a little bit more about James Baldwin, including us.
Including us. And next week, we will continue the talk about James Baldwin, giving we're breaking this up. Next week, we'll continue the talk and look at his interview that he did with The Village Voice, which is going to talk more about his views on being a homosexual, because he did not refer to himself as gay,
which is an interesting choice, but I'm very fascinated to kind of hear to go into that, you know.
Yeah, well, next week.
Yeah, because you know what, I usually what? This is like my own kind of feeling. Yeah. I yeah, feel yeah. like somebody, if I'm talking to somebody who, well, I guess he's a part of the community, so it doesn't matter, he's outside of it, but let's say I'm talking to somebody who's not Black or gay, right? And if they right. refer to, and this is casual, if they refer yeah. to Black people as African Americans, I immediately think, oh, you're uncomfortable. And if somebody casually refers to gay people as homosexuals, then I'm like, wow, okay, you're uncomfortable with that too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel mm-hmm. that way too or no?
You know, I think that James Baldwin, it's so interesting, and we'll get into this next week, but I love a little teaser talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, like, he was before they had a word for it.
Mm.
Like, the word gay is yeah. it's new. And that's why, like, we talk about other cultures, there might be homosexuality within their culture. We've even talked about this in, like, ancient Africa. There was homosexuality that took place.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have, like, the word gay for
name,
it. Because it didn't mean the same thing that it does now. And, like, now it's so tied up in, you know, religious persecution as
right,
well, you
yeah.
know? And so it doesn't mean that same sort of thing or that ritualistic practice. So for him growing up, there wasn't a name for it, you know?
Right.
And so I think it was hard for him to identify with that and that movement that was happening. It was like, for him, I believe he missed the boat.
Mm-hmm.
But homosexuality was like a thing that he was like, oh, that's what I am. I am a homosexual. That was a word that he could
right.
sort of grasp onto, which is fascinating.
Yeah. And it's kind of been more reclaimed, I would say, now, too, the word gay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And also, too, and in some sects, we talked about this, too, it's also, for some, they're evolving outside of that
yeah,
word.
Queer.
I think
mm-hmm.
queer is coming up. And so it's I think, and it's so interesting, I think it's so fitting that we're talking about this, because you said this earlier, James Baldwin was such a wordsmith,
mm-hmm.
and how anytime someone tells you that words don't matter, they're wrong.
They matter so
matter.
Much.
It's a power. It's an energy. It's an expression.
It's a way that people expose their inner thoughts too.
Oh yeah. And it's a symbol for what those inner thoughts are.
Ooh,
you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. Well, we'll continue the talk next week with more with my best friend. Happy birthday, Jimmy Baldwin. Oh, his birthday was August 2nd. I don't think I mentioned
that. But you know what? We're just celebrating the first part of August as James Baldwin time.
James Baldwin time. Jimmy Baldwin time, baby. he's the fire of the time.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott, and we're
Everything's Coming Up Simpsons.
We are a Simpsons podcast on the Maximum Fun Network, and we've got some exciting news.
Ooh, tell me.
We are going to be doing some live podcast shows in some of our favorite cities. We're so excited, and we want to let you guys know out there in the Max Fun universe that we are coming to you.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. On Saturday, September 15th, we will be at the North Door in Austin, Texas.
Yeehaw.
On Saturday, December 1st, we will be at the Alamo Draft guest house, Sloan's Lake in Denver, Colorado.
There's no basement in the Alamo.
We'll find out. Friday, December 7th, we are going to be at the Vera Project in Seattle, Washington.
Oh, God. Nirvana.
Yes.
Okay.
And Saturday, December 8th, we will be at Mississippi Studios in Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Matt Groening lives there.
Yes.
Or once lived there.
He still lives there in our hearts. So make sure that you mark your calendars for those dates, and we will be posting the ticketing links on our Twitter. That is at SimpsonsPod, and we will smell you later.
All right, so we did the episode.
Yeah, episode, well, almost. We have a few little things to do here at the tail bitty end.
Yes.
We
do.
We've got some reviews coming in. We've got a review of the week. They wrote this review on Apple Podcasts. I think that's what the kids are calling it now.
Oh, okay. Cool.
On the Apple Podcast. Also, I don't know this. Let us know if you're writing us reviews on other things like Stitcher. Like, let us know and we'll look at it.
Yeah,
and
or
read
Spotify.
It.
Is there a way that you can review on Spotify?
Let us know if that is like maybe there's hundreds of reviews that we've been ignoring. So if that's the case, let us know. Email us, tweet us.
Yeah, we want to thank you.
Yeah, and read your amazing riveting review. This one comes from Poison Ivily. Cute, and
that is cute.
And the E is like with a three. You know, I love an E with a three. It's just I can't get enough of it. Like when En Vogue did it, I'm like,
yeah,
yes, because there was only three of them. Smart.
Yeah, I know. I remember that.
Album wasn't that great. But anyways, okay. They said, okay, let me tell you. I started this in the beginning of November. It's near the end of June now. 126 episodes that iTunes was still carrying, which it, at this point is probably 230 plus hours of absolute snark, sass, and on-air class.
Ooh.
A podcast that simplifies life with extra commentary to lighten up the mood for those who still have a hard time looking at the news without being nauseous.
Oh.
At first, I thought I would only listen to recent episodes, but every episode, it is its own gem and can still be applied today no matter how we think 2015 is a different beast in 2018. Mm. Hearing you guys is truly like listening to friends debate and scream into the abyss of how things are turning out for everyone and yourselves. Can't wait for your guys' next episode.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice.
Yeah. Yes, oh yes, God. Yes. And welcome. Thank you for, yeah, you joined in November and you've been catching up and we love it. So you can also write us a review wherever you listen to your podcast.
Thank you so much. And then also we got a message that was super nice from listener Christopher S. And they write, hey, just wanted to message and say I am binging your podcast right now and I'm loving it. I was walking my dog looking like a fool, laughing out loud to all the hilarity that ensues every episode. I love how charismatic and personable you two seem in every episode and how much fun you have. It feels like I'm right there with you. Keep up the great work and can't wait to be up to date. Can't wait for you to be up to date too.
Oh,
that's so nice of you to say. And you know, it's like us, like, oh, look how much people love us. But like, we really, I think the reason that me and James want to read these things on the air is because we really want to appreciate the love that you guys are giving us. Like, you know, it just really feels like a community, you know?
Yep.
It really feels like we're not just, you know, Linda tripping ourselves and just putting it out there into the ether.
That
like
that you are, there are actually people listening and enjoying it and like appreciate it. Cause you don't, that's how we get our feedback of like, are people into it? Like, we don't know. And Aneke was saying, like, for me, it definitely lifts up my spirits when I hear these things. It's so encouraging. Cause sometimes there's some days you're like, oh, I don't know. And then you get a message like this and it just really helps to inspire. So thank you all for listening and your support.
Yeah, seriously. So that was through, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts. You can tweet at us at Minority Corner, corner spelled with a K. You can join our Facebook page. You can send us a message on Facebook. Remember, send us questions. We did that whole episode where we did Ask Minority Corner Anything. So we're here not just for praise. We're also here to
to answer your questions and to help you with whatever it is that you're you're needing help with. Like, that's, it is, like I said, we are a community. It takes a village, yeah. A minority village.
Or if you want to, like, help us with something, like, if you have answers to a question that we pose on here, we would yeah. love to hear that. Or if I said something, you know, I don't know what I'm saying half the time. If you want to say something that, like, nicely correct us, politely inform us of a different way of going about it, we're totally into hearing that sort of stuff too.
Yeah. Or if there's something that we've, like, not talked about or touched upon, it literally, I've always said this, it takes such a village, and, like, you guys give us great, I mean, you all, I don't want to genderize, you all give us such great insights into things that, you know, we could be missing out on. There's so many different things. So, and also sidebar, Jennifer Lopez is getting the Video Vanguard Award. I feel like we're scraping the bottom of the barrel, but there it is.
Wow, you just snuck that in there. I don't feel that way. No. Oh,
damn it.
No, I don't feel that way. I like Jennifer Lopez.
Oh, really? I didn't say I didn't like her. Oh, man. I thought we were going to be on the same page.
Wow, no. Why you just squeeze that in there? You know I like Jennifer Lopez. Well, she's looking good.
No, I didn't. Well, again, Aneke, more than just her looks. More
I know.
Than just her looks, Aneke.
Her videos are works of art.
Okay, there you go. Now we're back to our artistry. Oh, man, I thought we were going to really wrap it up right there.
No,
I
just feel don't like, assume, James.
Okay. I feel like there's other people in groups like Aerosmith who've not gotten any recognition in all the videos that they've done.
Group you pick? Is Aerosmith?
I'm sorry, I'm in stitches.
Wow. Okay, wow, we are ending on a note right now.
I did not mean to do this.
I am so confused.
Oh my God. Okay. Let me explain real quick. No, what happened was, because I did some research and I thought Janet was still getting snubbed because of Nipplegate, but right. Janet already won an award back in 1990. So she can't win it again, though, like, I feel like it's only recently been called the Michael Jackson Video Vanguard Award. So I think she deserves it again because the name is strange, but I don't know.
Hey, I support this, but you did not bring up Janet Jackson. You brought up Aerosmith.
Oh, because in my mind, I already knew that. She had already won an award. Madonna's already won an award. All the icons have already won. So I feel like they're like, okay, and J-Lo. So,
J-Lo is an icon. The early 2000s would be nothing without Jenny from the Block. I'm sorry.
I will be waiting for tonight forever. Me too. I think that song still holds today. It could have been dropped today and it still is so great. But If You Had My Love was not that great. And like,
She
doesn't have a lot of, like, iconic, like, I don't know, looks and dance moves.
Yeah, she
does.
That,
like,
green dress?
Well, I mean, looks as in, like, music videos that you're just, like, you know, I feel like Madonna and Britney and Janet have, like, iconic,
yeah,
like,
they won
know,
those awards.
And that's what I'm saying. We're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
But Aerosmith?
Because their Alicia Silverstone series with, like, they're crazy.
Who cares
and, like,
about that?
They innovated music videos in the 90s as a rock band.
James, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. I did not mean to go out fully assuming I would be right on board with you.
So I would say 80% of the time we are usually on board about things.
I like Jennifer Lopez.
I did not say I didn't like her. I just said that I think we're at the bottom of the barrel.
That is implying that you don't like her.
That is not. That's putting words in my mouth, and words are important.
Bottom of the barrel. That is so rude.
It's a beautiful barrel. A lot of people have been in that barrel. Janet was in that barrel, Michael Jackson was in that barrel.
Now you're just, like, being ridiculous about it.
Rihanna was in that barrel, and now they're like, oh, who's still in here? Oh, hey, J-Lo, she's still in here. Let's give her one.
I don't feel comfortable going out. I'm putting my hat in to say I support Jennifer Lopez. I was a fan of Jennifer Lopez. Yo Quiero Dinero, her newest song.
Oh, I'm Not Your Mama. I loved it. I'm Not Your Mama.
She's good.
I did think that Iggy Azalea was a misstep, but, you know,
everybody travels down that lane. Your beloved Britney did it too.
You're right. And I've taken her to task for it too. Hey, I saw Britney in concert and I am singing a different tune about her these days. So
I'm just, you know.
Keeping me 100. I appreciate it.
I am. And you know what? We're just doing our thing.
I hope that it's going to be a great MTV Music Video Awards. I'm glad that...
Who watches that?
Well, I don't know. I know we're closing up shop, but I just have to say, I can't believe that Janelle Monáe is not nominated for all the awards because she did a masterpiece this year.
Thank you. Why didn't you end on that note, James?
Okay. Now we're back. Okay. This is good. We're coming in this one. I think that the world was sleeping on Janelle Monáe. I think it sucks that, like,
when
Beyonce does a visual album, the world goes crazy. But when Janelle Monáe does one, is it because she, like, what is the difference? I don't understand.
I think I know what it is. And we're closing up shop right now.
Yeah.
And I love Janelle Monáe. I went to her concert. I had a fabulous time. She has a touch of theater kid. And I think that throws some people off.
Lady Gaga had a touch of theater kid, but people liked it. But she's also a white woman.
And also, she kind of commented. She skyrocketed up and went back down.
Right. Yeah. You know, because it happened too fast. Happened too fast, you know. And I think that Lady Gaga was never meant to be that large on that scene. I think she was always meant to be like an indie kid.
I completely agree. And I think that Janelle Monáe hasn't reached that level because she's black, too. I agree with you on that. And I think it's that touch of theater kid. It throws people off.
Interesting. Really. Whereas, like, Beyonce's able to get into that mainstream,
she doesn't have that, you know. She kind of also came out the gate real basic, like Destiny's Child was
crazy,
just right,
in love,
crazy in love, and then she started getting weird and artsy.
Yeah, it wasn't until like her fourth album when she was like, fuck it, this is what I'm doing.
Whereas, like, Janelle Monáe's like, I'm a robot, deal with it, bitches, and everybody's like, oh my god.
Oh, wow. You're so right. Okay. All right. I just want to, you know what? I just know that awards are power in this industry.
I
feel like Janelle Monáe deserves all that power and awards.
I completely agree. That I like Janelle Monáe because she's a touch of theater kid.
Right.
That's what resonates with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just think basic ass people have a hard time relating to it, but they need to get with the program and expand their outlooks.
Stop being so basic.
Yes, agreed.
Well, look, see, we came back together.
Anytime
we're getting into an argument, I'm just like, but Janelle Monáe, and then we'll be on the same page.
You know what? We weren't in an argument. We were just having, we shocked each other.
A healthy debate.
We shocked each other.
Ooh, that's a good way to put it. I shocked you with like closing up shop and throwing in this other thing, thinking that we were just going to agree on this one point. And then you shocked
me
with like,
no.
I am here for it. I'm here for it. And that's why I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you too.
Yeah. I love all of our listeners as well.
Yeah, I love you guys too. Thanks for listening to that weird last segment.
That was an accident. Thanks for hanging. You know, a treat, because there are some listeners who didn't stick around till the end. We're like Marvel. You always stay till the end because you never know
what
you're going to get.
And credits, baby. You never know who might be paging you on your space pager.
You don't. What?
That was. Did you not watch Avengers?
I did. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. You took me for. You're right. This is Paging. Okay. I got. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep. We're paging away. Sorry. I missed that joke.
James.
I know. Who works for Marvel? I guess you do now.
Give me your job.
Yeah, I can't. You're hired. Thank you for listening to my. I almost said Marvel Corner. Thank you for listening. We're done. Thank you for listening to Minority Corner.
Because together.
We're
the majority.
Are we?
Goodbye.
We will be.
God damn it.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.